Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. We're here with Craig Van Dien, Dr. Craig Van Dien, Director of Sports and Spine Medicine at Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute, a double board certification in physical medicine and rehabilitation and sports medicine. Did I get that all right?
You got that all right. Thanks so much for having me.
Welcome. Thanks for being here. So let's jump right in. We're talking sports and sports injuries today, and you know all about them. So let's jump in with, would be the most recent sports injury, or the one that's been talked about a lot. Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers is ready for a great season for the Jets, even though they beat the Eagles, which I'm not happy about, but okay. he was injured early on, and it was an Achilles tendon injury. Could you speak to that?
Yeah. So, Aaron Rodgers unfortunately suffered an Achilles tendon rupture. And for an athlete, it's quite a significant injury. Now, before we go into kind of the extent of injury that he had and maybe some of his potential recovery, there's some terminology that I wanted to review for your listeners. One thing to understand about the Achilles tendon is that it's often subjected to a substantial amount of forces. And for the most part, these tendon-based structures don't have great blood flow, which would imply that it wouldn't heal well. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the Achilles tendon is just the endpoint of two large muscle groups, and that's your gastrocnemius and soleus. And their primary responsibility is to push the foot down. So like if you're pushing your toes down towards the floor, but also they control some of the motion when your foot is coming up. And that upward motion is actually, other muscles are responsible for that, but it helps to control it so it's not too aggressive. So over time, as this tendon is loaded, it actually gets injured, and it's a chronic change. So many times patients refer to these injuries as tendonitis, where there's inflammation. The truth is that this tissue is often void of inflammation. And so what we see over time is that there's subtle breakdown of this tissue, and we call these chronic cumulative microtraumas, or overuse for simpler phrasing. And as more and more stress is applied to this, the tendon might become less and less responsive. So what we start to see is actually physical changes within the tendon, and we might be able to identify this on imaging such as ultrasound, if it's done with a physician who's trained in it, or even MRI. And so ultimately what we're seeing at the end of this is just damage to those collagen fibers, so damage to the tendon, and that ultimately makes it more susceptible to rupture. So, overall, the occurrence rate is very low in the general population, but when you have athletes who are loading this tendon regularly, they have a much higher what we call lifetime incidence, so occurrence over the course of their life, especially in competitive athletes where the activity is extremely high demand. Now, to put it into perspective, Aaron Rodgers' case, my suspicion is that probably this tendon had wear from all of his years of playing.
Yeah.
And now you put him in a situation where he's getting tackled, the foot is planted, and then it's simultaneously trying to contract, or at least the muscle, to push off, and you have this abrupt change in force. That's when you get this rupture. And you can tell immediately he goes down. Oftentimes, patients feel this immense pop in the back of their leg or in the lower portion of their ankle. He's going to have quite an extensive recovery after this. Generally speaking, we look at about 6 months. But the recovery would vary based off of the individual who suffered the injury. So, with that said, there are two trains of thought about how to approach this. The first is for patients who are not necessarily athletes or don't have high demand activities on the legs, sometimes we can treat this conservatively with casting. And that's done in a serial manner where we gradually adjust the position of that. Mm-hmm. And we can see quite good healing with these types of management strategies. And then that's followed by a therapy program. But for a high-performing athlete, it needs to be repaired, and it needs to be repaired quite quickly, which is why you saw him go to surgery right away. And then that's going to be followed by a quite extensive rehabilitation program. Now, the major difference between the two is that if you're casting or doing surgery, the overall functional outcomes, meaning how someone is performing and how they're feeling, are quite similar. The difference is in the re-rupture rate, especially for your athletes who have high demand on these structures, that if you do it the conservative route where you're just casting, there might be a higher rate for re-rupture, whereas the surgical route tends to have a lower re-rupture rate.
So you mentioned that these tendons, they will wear over time. I would think, that the NFL would monitor these things. Is it something you can monitor? Because they could have seen, they have seen this coming? I guess is my question.
Yeah, I don't think they could have seen it coming, because the reality is that any individual, whether you're an athlete or you're not an athlete, we're constantly wearing these structures with our day-to-day use. So it's not something you monitor for. And collectively, even though athletes are more subject to maybe a higher lifetime rate or risk for rupture, it's not something that you would access on a regular basis unless the athlete developed a symptomatic complaint, because oftentimes, something that would suggest that the tendon is damaged is the athlete starts to complain of pain in that region. And then if it's addressed early on, we might, delay the propagation. But that's not always the case. I mean, a lot of times patients aren't symptomatic. It's just that abrupt change or that abrupt force on the tendon that causes it to rupture. And if you think about it, like knee joints, for example, I mean, those wear regularly with time. And that's just a natural age-related change. We don't necessarily screen for that unless someone becomes symptomatic. And that's when you start the process of looking into that structure.
Now, the Achilles tendon injury that Aaron Rodgers suffered, it's a major blow for him because he needs that to do his job. But for your everyday a guy like me who just needs to get to work, and I'm not, actually I do run, but I'm just saying, like your normal everyday guy, how it doesn't have as much of an effect on them. So how long is the healing time on that? Because they're not looking to get back into it as quickly, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a major structure for anybody, whether you're a competitive athlete or you just want to walk around, because having a rupture will affect your day-to-day functioning and your ambulation and mobility, and again, for high-performing athletes, your ability to participate in the sporting activity. With that said, the plan or the management strategy oftentimes varies based off of the overall level of activity, because some patients do fairly well without surgical intervention, and like I said, when they look at the data comparing those who go to operative intervention versus those who don't, the overall functional outcomes are very similar. Mm. So the usual time course is about 6 months. And if a patient is appropriate to have the non-operative form of management, they will be casted serially over time, where every few weeks the position of the cast is slightly adjusted, because initially we don't want too much stress on the tendon, so the foot is pointed downward, and then the next casting is pointed upward a little bit more and a little bit more upward as the tendon heals. So this is usually like a several week to several month process. And then the therapy and recovery is quite substantial after that. So we're looking at probably about a 6 month time frame either way.
Okay. Again, in Aaron Rodgers' situation, could turf versus grass on the field cause this, make it more likely to happen or less likely?
Yeah. And this has been a big debate, whether or not they should be playing on grass or playing on turf. From the studies that I've seen, it seems like the lower extremity injuries are more common on turf-based surfaces. But I think the reality is that he had such an aggressive foot plant and positional adjustment that I don't think grass surfaces would have changed the outcome of that tackle.
Do you think that the injury, based on the video that you saw of it happening, do you think if he was 10 years younger or 20 years younger, it wouldn't have happened because he doesn't have the wear that you mentioned?
It's hard to say because, wear is only one factor. If the force is substantial enough, then even a healthy tendon can give way to an aggressive tackle.
Okay, so it could just happen to anyone at any time.
I would say that if a tendon has age and wear to it, then the likelihood of tear would go up, especially when there's an aggressive force or burden on that tendon. But the reality, and we see it in young athletes too, is that if there's just enough force, that tendon structure could be overcome by that force and it can rupture.
We're speaking with Dr. Craig Van Deen, Director of Sports and Spine Medicine at Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. Let's move to the spine. Let's talk about Damian Harris. If you could, for those who are not familiar with Damian, also a football player, and what happened to him?
Yeah, so Damian Harris suffered a cervical spine injury in a recent game with the New York Giants. And actually, watching the video, when you look at the tackle, it doesn't seem that substantial, but clearly it was enough to create consequence for him. And, so when we think about football in general, football is high energy, high impact contact sport. And the reality of that is that cervical spine is subject to injury, and the injury can occur in many different fashions. Obviously the most severe thing that we worry about is spinal cord injury. But in most cases, the neck injuries are quite common, and the most common thing we hear of is stingers, and you may have heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, stingers is just when the bundle of nerves that sits in the neck area is stretched, and oftentimes athletes will report something like burning within the arm,
right,
numbness or tingling, and at times they can have weakness. Now, that can resolve shortly after the time of injury, and patients can actually go back to play if that's the case. If neurologically they seem fine, in some cases that can continue over the next several days, and then it usually resolves and athletes can go back to physical activity. But again, when patients develop these types of cervical spine or neck injuries, we're looking at things like muscle strength, the sensation in the extremities, pain-free range of motion of the neck. Those are all important indicators as to whether or not someone can go back to sports. Now, if symptoms persist, it could require additional workup. When we're thinking about other potential injuries to the cervical spine, we're looking at things like cervical sprain or muscle sprains, which tend to resolve without any substantial issue. And again, we're looking to make sure that patients don't have neurological issues or range of motion problems with the neck. More significantly, we can see something called cervical cord neuropraxia, which is basically a transient injury to the spinal cord. So you get hit so hard that the spinal cord stops functioning the way that it normally would. And so you can see things like sensory changes and weaknesses in all four limbs. And that could resolve over the course of a few minutes, or it can persist for up to 36 or 48 hours. And if it persists beyond that, that's when MRI imaging is needed to assess the integrity of the spinal cord. And we're looking for things like swelling within the spinal cord. We're looking for instability of the bones, things that might suggest that the injury was more significant. So as it pertains to Damian Harris, you know, for the last I read, they didn't release a lot of information about the extent of injury, but whatever happened to him was substantial enough to the point where you can see he was relatively immobile on the field and he was being addressed by multiple healthcare officials.
Yeah. So when someone gets a stinger, and I recall, as you described it, I remember getting that when I played football back in, when I was young. And I just want to reiterate, if that happens to somebody, should you stop immediately? Because I kind of remember being concerned about it, but I got to finish the game. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good question because, the nature of an athlete is to want to get right back into the sporting activity. The reality is that when you suffer this type of injury, I would say in most cases there is some physician or medical staff member that's on the sideline. It should be evaluated and assessed, and really you shouldn't be going back to the game until symptoms have resolved. Because again, what we're looking for is that the individual doesn't have numbness or tingling in the arm.
Mm-hmm.
There's no issues with strength, that there's pain-free range of motion, so the athlete's ability to move the neck in all different directions is without pain. So if a stinger occurs and over the course of, say, like a half, it resolves, then the athlete may be appropriate, as long as they meet these certain conditions, to go back into the game. Now, if the symptoms persist, then it's better for the athlete to stay out of the game until the symptoms resolve and until this criteria is met. Now, sometimes patients are hit so hard that they end up with stingers on both sides. Now, an athlete shouldn't return after that because there's the potential for more significant injury when that occurs,
right,
and that would be some injury to the spinal cord. So if it's a stinger on one side and it resolves, there's the potential for the athlete to return. If it doesn't resolve, they shouldn't return, and if it's on both sides, the athlete definitely shouldn't return.
Now, Damian Harris, in the Damian Harris case, when and if he returns to football, is he more, let's say he's cleared to play again, is he more susceptible to a more serious injury? Or once it heals, he's kind of back to where he was before the injury?
Yeah, it depends on what they finally release with him with regard to the extent of injury he had. I will tell you that the data on return to play after neck injury is extremely poor. Meaning that we don't have a lot of information to say this is the most appropriate time to return after certain types of injuries. And there are studies that try to stratify that, but overall the information is really lacking. Now, there are some instances where players absolutely shouldn't return, and you've probably heard of players who develop like a spear tackling spine, or they have this kind of diagnosis of spear tackling spine, which is a combination of different clinical characteristics like narrowing of the spinal canal, straightening of the spine on imaging, abnormalities of the spine that could be related to trauma, and a history of spear tackling, which clearly is no longer permitted in the NFL. I mean, patients like that should never return to football. That's a complete contraindication. If there's instability of the spine, meaning that the spine or the bones of the spine move when the patient is assessed on X-ray, that might be another reason why the patient shouldn't return. So it ultimately depends on the extent of injury and what his formal diagnosis is. But collectively, outside of some of these absolute contraindications to returning, it's hard to say because the data is not fully clear.
Okay. And we're talking sports injuries with Dr. Craig Van Deen, the Director of Sports and Spine Medicine at Hackensack Meridian Health and JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. Let's move on to another injury, sports injury, and this one Bryce Harper suffered, but he had Tommy John surgery, or a type of Tommy John. So before we jump into what he had done, let's just, can we explain what your basic Tommy John surgery is? It started when a pitcher named Tommy John had this surgery done for the first time, and it worked. Yeah. And now a lot of people get that surgery for their arm. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so let's start with the anatomy discussion. So when we refer to Tommy John surgery, we're referring to restoration or reconstruction of the ulnar collateral ligament. Now, the ulnar collateral ligament is a stabilizer of the elbow that sits on that inner portion of the elbow. Now, for pitchers or throwing athletes, a lot of force or stress is placed on that elbow, especially during late cocking of the arm and early acceleration. So that's when that most force goes through that inner portion of the elbow. Mm-hmm. Now, if the stress exceeds the capacity of that ligament to sustain that stress, then that ligament can tear. And it can tear in several manners. You could have partial tears where aspects of that ligament is torn, and then you can have complete tears where it's fully torn. Athletes who tear that ligament have a horrible and very challenging time throwing. And so oftentimes outside of pain, the inability or incapacity to throw is a huge indicator that ligament might be injured. So when you think about these types of tears, similar to the Achilles tendon that we discussed previously, you know, sometimes they can occur in a very acute manner where there's some very significant traumatic incident where the ligament tears. In other cases, and in many cases, it's these accumulative microtraumas that result in ligament weakening over time. And then eventually, when too much force is placed on that ligament, it tears. Now, if you think about like an average ball that you're throwing at 80 miles per hour, that's almost double the amount of torque that ligament can sustain. So mm-hmm. if you think about your regular athletes or pitchers, they're throwing much faster than that on the bases. The difference is that these athletes have a lot of supportive muscle structure. And this muscle structure helps to absorb some of those forces as to not overburden the ligament. Now, in Bryce Harper's case, he ended up with a partial tear of that ligament. And the first thing that he tried, which is generally the recommendation, is conservative therapy. So physical therapy rehabilitation program. In addition to that, he augmented that process with something called platelet-rich plasma. Now, after his lack of response to that treatment, he opted for the surgical intervention. And granted, there were other issues that happened. I believe he fractured a finger in the interim and things of that nature. So, but ultimately, he underwent surgical intervention. Now, when we think about surgical intervention, there's two ways to approach this. The first is reconstruction, which is the traditional way in which surgeons tend to repair this structure. The second is actually a physical repair to the existing tendon. Now, that's fallen out of favor, although there are some newer techniques in which they provide these kind of like, more significantly structured suture complexes that allow for more support. With that said, and I don't know which avenue he pursued because they don't mention it in the information about him, but mm-hmm. if I were to guess, he probably went through the reconstruction process because these tend to be more sound than just repairing the existing ligament. Generally speaking, the recovery is about 1 year, and he miraculously, is back to play at 6 months, which is atypical for an athlete.
And he's being monitored by doctors, so I would venture to guess that this is not dangerous for him. How do you explain the recovery in half the time?
Yeah, the only, again, if a little information came out about what was specifically done for him, we might have some more data.
Yeah.
If he did a repair, like maybe the ligament tear wasn't sufficient enough to require a full reconstruction, and they felt that the repair was sufficient to provide enough support for that elbow, especially given that he's not a pitcher and throwing 100 plus miles per hour. You know, it's a very real possibility that he could get back in 6 months. If he did the reconstruction, then the only thing to really explain that recovery is just extensive and regular rehabilitation, because it's the one way you're going to get back to playing. And if he can build up his muscle strength and get back to throwing, you know, and they feel that the burden that he's placing on that ligament is not substantial enough to cause further injury, he could get back to play. I mean, it doesn't mean that he's not at risk in the future, but you know, the reality is that if he's showing all the signs and symptoms of being able to participate effectively without creating a substantial, you know, injury down the road, they're going to clear him to go back to play. But so I would say that if he did do the reconstruction, I think that, you know, it's just the intensive rehabilitation that he participated in that got him back to this point.
And he went back, he played right field, which is more, he's got more throwing out in right field. Now he's at first base. So there's less throwing there, so that would create less of a strain on his everyday routine.
Yeah, and maybe that was part of, you know, his return to play, that they modified his position to reduce the burden and the amount of throwing that he was putting on the elbow. I mean, like, you know, in most cases we see this very often in pitchers, to your original statement about the Tommy John surgery. And so, you know, and that's just because when they throw, there's just so much force on that elbow. You know, these ligaments get sprained and they start to get these micro traumas, and eventually they weigh and they tear.
So just to clarify, the original, for lack of a better term, original Tommy John surgery, has this recently happened? The platelet-rich plasma type of surgery, is this something new, or has it been around for a few years? And why did it take almost 50 years to develop that?
Yeah, so platelet-rich plasma has been around for some time. And
okay.
I would say maybe in like, as of late, it's become extremely popular in the medical field for very good reasons. There's a lot of data to support the use of this. So let's go through what platelet-rich plasma is. What we do is we take a blood sample, and then there are various methods by how this occurs, and this varies based off of the company and the kit that's being provided by the company. But the simple explanation is that the blood is split into several components. And one of those components is what we coin or call platelet-rich plasma, so a platelet-rich blood product. Now, platelets, historically, you know, in the general population, we perceive platelets as those cells that go to an area and they clot an area when you're bleeding, right? When you hold pressure, platelets go to the area, they block off the area where there's bleeding, and bleeding stops. Mm-hmm. But actually, platelets serve an extremely important function, especially in these super concentrations. And that's what this basically is, just a high concentration of platelets when they're released into tissue. And what they do is they draw growth factors to the area when they start to interact with one another. And these growth factors take these tissues that generally are extremely poor in healing and try to stimulate that healing response. So it's been used for things like osteoarthritis, ligamentous injuries, primarily when they're partial tears, like in the case of Bryce Harper, for rotator cuff issues. And the list goes on. And more evidence is coming out to suggest the value of this type of injectable for these injuries.
Well, Dr. Van Dien, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been, to say the least, very interesting for me, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the time.
Dr. Craig Van Dien, Director of Sports and Spine Medicine at Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. Double board certified in physical medicine and rehabilitation and sports medicine. And if you want more info, go to jfkmc.org. If you want a podcast of this show, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. Talk to you next week.